Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney, and today we're going to be talking about China passes a new cybersecurity law, AT&T and the FCC, Google recommendations on the USB-C standard, and augmented reality in cars. That's right, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, that being augmented reality. Now, we're just going to go straight into it, and this, I think, is interesting, and it's vaguely technology, but this is something that is a technology enthusiast and a big internet user, I think you and I really need to know. On Monday, that's last Monday, China passed a controversial cybersecurity bill, further tightening restrictions on online freedom of speech, raising concerns that it could intensify an already wide-ranging internet censorship. Now, China has what's been dubbed the Great Firewall. It aggressively blocks sites or snuffs out internet content and commentary on topics considered sensitive, such as Beijing's human rights record and criticism of the government. Now, you're probably wondering, how do they do this? You know, the only way that I am aware of how to do this, what it is the internet comes from the government. They pretty much probably have a backbone that feeds everything else. Now, if they have a backbone there, when you're sending bits and something gets flagged, they can say, okay, no, 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 yes. Allegedly, they did something similar on spying on Skype conversations that were from to China or from China. So if you had a friend that was Chinese and you were talking to them, they could allegedly listen in on you or watch you. The law, which has been approved by China's National People's Congress Standing Committee, bans internet users from publishing a wide variety of information. And by the way, this is new on top of what the Great Firewall already does, including anything that damages national honor, disturbs the economic or social order, or is aimed at overthrowing the social system. Now, here to me is one of the most onerous parts of this law. Now, everything about this law, in my opinion, violates what the internet really is about, and that's talking on controversial subjects. Now, the best thing about the internet is having the ability to talk about something that you may not have the chutzpah to talk about in person, and there's nothing wrong with that. Having controversial conversations helps generate opinions, helps you do research, and in my opinion, it can make you a better person. Now, what this law also requires, and like I said, is the most onerous in my opinion, the law requires companies to verify a user's identity, also called doxing, effective making it illegal to go online anonymously, which, love it or hate it, is one of the best and worst parts of the internet is Bob can go on the internet and say either the most amazing thing and he won't be recognized, or the most hateful thing and he won't be recognized for it. And then it's there. It's left online. And, you know, Bob can call him, like, he can call himself Card Shark 25. And everybody think, oh, Card Shark 25, he's such a horrible person. But honestly, that's one of the reasons I love the internet. Now, it's not as much as the Wild Wild West as it was back in the late 90s. Now, in the late 90s, it was pretty much a free-for-all. You could do what you want. Now, it's not so much as everybody and all the governments are kind of getting their groove on a little bit about it. But I think this is something that's dangerous. I don't want my personal identity known online as much. Now, granted, I do a lot of podcasts and I'm a little bit known online. But I still enjoy being anonymous, having conversations. It's part of who I am and part of really what I enjoy. Now, foreign companies in particular expressed concern about the language that would require them to cooperate with the Chinese authorities to protect national security, broadly worded language that was included in the final version of the law. They say this is dangerous. This dangerous law commandeers internet companies to be a facto agents of the state. I'm thinking, honestly, this is kind of, you know, you pay to play, as it were. If you're in China or one of these countries that maybe be a little more onerous, you don't really have a choice. Is it fair? Is it right? You and I can argue that. But it's kind of, if you want to play in China, you got to follow the rules. Now, the most interesting thing about this to me on the technology side is how exactly they're going to do this. Now, they do have the Great Firewall, and if I understand the way they do things, everything goes through this firewall to get to the outside world. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how long they can keep it up or if they will change it. Now, in theory, it wouldn't be too hard. I mean, it will take a lot of work, and there's quite a lot of people in China. So the technology by itself is actually kind of interesting. So we're really going to see how well it does. You know, I don't know. I'm fascinating. Now, I do have a question for everybody out there. Is this something you think we need? Do we want this in the United States? Do we hate this in the United States? And what do you like about the internet? This is really something that to me is an interesting topic. So please let me know. I mean, I really do find this fascinating. Now, we're going to switch 180 degrees. We're going to talk about online video for a little bit. I want to know, where do you guys go for online content? Do you go on YouTube, Hulu, Amazon Prime Video? Is there something or some source of video or content that you watch the most? I know for me personally, I'm a little tired of Amazon Prime Video and Netflix, mainly because I like a lot of older shows. I have a hard time sometimes getting into newer TV shows, so I do miss watching some of my favorite shows. Now, some of my favorite shows include Star Trek The Next Generation. We're talking about Numbers, Highway Patrol, 1955, or more controversial shows from the 70s like Maud or All in the Family. And some of these shows have kind of gone the wayside. Now, you can still watch them. They're always being broadcasted somewhere. There are over-the-air channels that show them because the rights are probably cheaper. So I don't know. And the other thing is, how do you watch your content? Now, personally, I'm not a big fan of smart TVs. I don't like the fact that a lot of time the software is not upgradable. Or if they do upgrade, it stops when the next generation comes out. I'm a huge fan of a home theater PCs. I love the idea. And now you can get cheaper or smaller home theater kits. Back in the day, I had this huge tower behind my TV, and it was really ugly, really hard to hide, and sounded like a jumbo jet starting up. There's nothing like turning it on and watching a video and hearing, it's horrible. There's a couple. I know we talked about the Nook before, and there's some cheaper ones and more expensive solutions. I personally have a Mac Mini hooked up to mine. It's a perfect solution, in my opinion. And it looks like it's a clean piece of kit, which is important to me. The other one I really like is the Roku. The Roku is absolutely, in my opinion, the top one to copy. The GUI is easy and clean to use. It's really simple. And pretty much everybody from 18 to 80 that I've heard, that I've talked to, that have it, everybody seems to enjoy it, which to me is the number one. If you enjoy it, if you think it's simple. Now, there are a few things I think that over time they'll fix. I know they just released, like we talked about, a bunch of new products and refreshes. I've seen a couple of new refreshes, and I do kind of like it. I know the base price ones, being the $29 and $39 ones, have been interesting. Now, the $39 one still has what a lot of people call the RCA or composite cables, and has HDMI. That's kind of the one that I recommend everybody get. I mean, you do get benefits of the other ones. One of them has a USB port on the side, allows you to plug in a thumb drive or a hard drive. I have the older model of that one. I like that one, but for price point of $39, I mean, come on, that's ridiculously cheap. The other thing that I'm going to be doing soon is I'm going to be playing a little bit more with Plex. I'm actually going to be purchasing a new computer within probably the next 3 weeks. That'll be a dedicated Plex server. Now, what the benefit of Plex is, you can rip your DVDs and put it on there. And for me, this is just for internal use, nobody else. I do like sitting and watching like a TV series all day type of thing. So what I'm be doing is ripping some of my DVDs that I own of a TV series. Like, for example, Highway Patrol, 1955. It's a way old show, I know, but it's still a great show in my opinion. And I burn the whole first season. I push play. I can do whatever I want all day, and it's in the background. Basically, it's my own personal Netflix. I'm going to be doing this with some of the music I have and some of the old-time radio that I have that I enjoy. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of home theater PCs. It's absolutely amazing what you can do. I actually, back in the day, built a Windows Media Center. So I think, if I remember correctly, it was XP Media Center Edition. And all I needed was a capture card, and I used an old DirecTV receiver, and it was perfect. I mean, actually, okay, so it wasn't perfect. It got glitchy after a while, but it was fun. I had an old PC laying around. All I did was add a capture card and a better sound card, and boom, I've got a homemade DVR. Now, there's things like Myth TV. I heard there's an Ubuntu variant I just recently heard about. It's Ubuntu Myth or Myth Ubuntu or something like that. It's an actual OS media center. Now, usually what Myth TV, if I remember correctly, is just a simple add-on to it. This is supposed to be a whole operating system built on top of Ubuntu and Linux. And so, like I said, it's just an amazing piece of hardware. I'm looking forward to seeing where the technology goes to in the future. I'm hoping for something smaller, something faster. So we'll see. We'll definitely see where it goes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about AT&T and the FCC.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back. Now, how many of you have heard of net neutrality? Now, what net neutrality basically means is there's no bias towards bits. Now, I guess to boil that down a little bit more, say you're AT&T, for example, and you own a video service like, I don't know, DirecTV. Now, let's say that DirecTV has an app where you can watch online through your cell phone, through your computer, through whatever, and you're owned by AT&T, and you can watch as much as you want through that app, and it won't go towards your cap. Now, on the other hand, imagine if you're Netflix, for example, and every movie you watch goes towards your cap, and this is what FCC is partially complaining about. The Federal Communications Commission says AT&T may be violating net neutrality rules by allowing DirecTV video to stream without counting against mobile data caps. Bingo, I just said that. The FCC Wireless Bureau outlined a concern in a letter sent to AT&T yesterday. Actually, by this, it's a couple of days ago. AT&T, which owns DirecTV and zero rates its video so it doesn't get counted against the data cap. What I just said. So at the same time AT&T charges other companies for rights to stream video or other media without counting against their data cap. Basically, pretty much, if you want to have any video that doesn't count against the cap, you have to pay to play. Now, the question is how much that is. I personally don't think it's really fair. I think, it's, you know, if you're going to be streaming content that's owned by AT&T, it should go toward your cap or not at all in any video service. Now, net neutrality is really about being agnostic of where it's coming from. Bits are bits. It doesn't matter if you have to pay to play. Everybody has to pay to play. It's basically just being fair. And everybody, especially me and people I know, like you, for example, listening to it, agree. Now, AT&T seems to be acting in a way that may harm open internet, such as preferring its own affiliated content and demanding fees from edge providers. The FCC is quoting from guidelines in the Open Internet Order. The DirecTV cap exemption combined with AT&T charging competitors for cap exceptions may obstruct competitors and harm consumers. Now, honestly, this is something that I don't like. I totally understand AT&T being, hey, if you want to watch DirecTV, it doesn't count against your cap. And if I was a DirecTV subscriber, in all honesty, it probably wouldn't bother me. I'd be excited that I could watch whatever I want, and the only thing it would cost me would be battery time. On the other hand, for Netflix, Hulu Prime, even Ma and Pa Kettle video service, I do think it's a little bit onerous. I do think that net neutrality is something that we all need, because I think it does the number one thing with your internet. It is truly about is innovation. It's about content. It's, you know, I don't know. I just, what do you guys think? Are you for it? Are you against it? I'm a big fan of net neutrality. I think it's something. Now, based on confidential information provided by AT&T to the commission, the cost of zero-rating full-fledged video service in AT&T's network could be significant. The FCC is worried that it could make it financially infeasible to compete against DirecTV Now, especially that an upcoming $35 per month video service is coming through DirecTV. You know, so same tune, different song. I mean, Comcast did this. Was that member correct? Verizon did this. This is nothing new, honestly. I think this has been an old complaint of a few people I know. And this isn't new. I think Boost Mobile did it, which is a pay-as-you-go provider. Verizon think have definitely done it. Comcast has done it. It's nothing particularly new, but it's still onerous against its users. AT&T and other broadband providers offer services that consumers watch video without incurring any data charges, AT&T said in a statement provided to Ars Technica. Now, this is something I'm going to have to do a little research. I wonder if Comcast have it. Now, Comcast has their own VOD, video on demand. Now, I have Comcast as my internet service provider, so I wonder if I actually pay for the package to watch their online content, if it would go towards my cap, especially now that Comcast has a 1 terabyte cap. Now, don't get me wrong, 1 terabyte is a lot, but when you're a cord cutter like me, it can seriously hamper everything I do. And unfortunately, these days, everything I do requires an internet connection when it's talking about my entertainment needs. I mean, I listen to Pandora, Spotify, YouTube, Hulu, Netflix. There's a ton of content I do online. Not only do I get my news on websites like Reddit, you know, which has a lot of pictures and a lot of videos. So this whole thing is horrible because they could easily say, hey, Reddit, if you want our subscribers to get anything from you, you're going to have to pay. That was one of the reasons why net neutrality came around, because I know Google was worried about it for a while, afraid that AT&T or Comcast were going to say, hey, Google, we know a lot of people love your free services like Google Maps and Gmail. Now, if you really want your customers to get to their Gmail accounts, you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay us to let us connect you. And this is the sole reason why net neutrality has been a big thing. Now, there's politicians and other people who don't agree with it or don't understand it or say what's wrong with making Google, for example, have to pay AT&T so their customers can get access to their Gmail accounts. Now, this is horrible. We need to support net neutrality because that's how all these amazing internet services get to us. Heck, they could even count it against stuff like those smart doorbells or baby monitors. Anything that connects to the internet, companies like Comcast or Xfinity or AT&T could say, hey, Google, we know you have a lot of Gmail subscribers. Pay up or people aren't going to be able to read their mail. Now, I've hammered on this a little too long, so we're going to switch topics a little bit more. But it's just horrible and onerous, and we really need you guys to help support the open and free internet. Now, here's a really amazing topic, and we're going to talk, this is completely different. And one of the reasons why I love technology is specifically stuff like this. The first home brain implant lets a locked-in woman communicate. A paralyzed woman has learned to use a brain implant to communicate through thought alone. It's the first time a brain-computer interface has been used in a home and a person's day-to-day life without the need for doctors and engineers to recalibrate the device. It's special to be the first, says HB, who is a 58-year-old who wishes to remain anonymous. She was diagnosed with an amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS. I'm really sorry. I know I butchered this. In 2008. A disease that ravages nerve cells, leaving people unable to control their body. These devices work by reading brain activity and translating into a signal that can be controlled by a computer or a robotic limb, for example. We actually had a topic a couple episodes ago where a guy was able to control an artificial electronic arm by thought alone. So this is probably the next evolution or the continued evolution of this technology. But so far, it's been difficult to make these devices fit into people's daily lives. They tend to need recalibrating by a team of engineers on a daily basis, and many are so complex they cannot work wirelessly. They have not actually been useful for anyone, says Ramsey, who thought, let's make it simple and affordable for patients who really need it. The team's device uses electrodes placed on the surface of the brain just underneath the skull. This makes it more invasive than external devices like EEG caps, but less so than traditional deep brain stimulation. Now, the device used to communicate is still slow process. It can take like a few minutes, apparently, to spell a single word, but its H8 is getting faster with training. So pretty much it sounds like it's a certain thought or certain ways or something. I'm assuming it's a thought or a pattern of thoughts that say R and D and all that. And it's probably just a matter of time between for her to get to know how to use the interface and then the engineer seeing how she uses it to change the software. And this is seriously, this is the next step of computing and how we can help people who are, like for her, she was locked in. She couldn't move. She couldn't communicate. I mean, this is, imagine Stephen Hawking's without his computer. I mean, he's one of the world's greatest minds. And without his computer, he wouldn't be able to communicate. So this is like the next thing. This will help a lot of people in the future. Now, there are some downsides, apparently. I mean, it's a very simple system. It's not complex at all. And apparently, yeah, I was wrong, it won't be able to control robotic limbs, but it's just a matter of time before they make it smaller and faster and more complex. It's a Gen 1 device, it sounds like, so eventually they're going to refine it enough where they can make it do amazing things. Now, if, say, she wanted to control lights and other things, it's probably stuff that they'd have to modify the home and stuff to get it to actually communicate with her implant. But we'll see. We're definitely going to have to keep an eye on this to see where it goes. I'm really impressed with this. And now we're coming to a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Google's strong recommendations on Android makers to not mess with a USB-C standard.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney. And in this last segment, we're going to be talking a little bit about Google and USB-C. Now, USB-C is a fairly new standard. I personally don't own any devices that use it. The most famous device I can think of that uses it right now is, for example, the Note 7, the phone that was causing people's houses and stuff to catch on fire. Now, there apparently are currently many different versions of faster charging methods. Qualcomm has Quick Charge, OnePlus has Dash Charge, Motorola has Turbo Charge, Huel has Super Charge, MediaTek has Pump Express, so there's a ton of different versions of this. Google's new Android CDD, however, says the company strongly recommends that USB-C devices must not support proprietary charging methods that modify V-bus voltage that are beyond default levels, according to Android policy. Although Google's Android CDD clearly states that it's recommended for now, the company notes that manufacturers might not have a choice in the future. Google says that future versions of Android might require all types devices to support fully interoperable with standard Type-C chargers. Now, they're pretty much saying, don't mess up the standard, keep it as it is. Now, I am wondering, and this is kind of a guess, I'm wondering if the USB-C and the standard that Samsung used was partially responsible for the Note 7 exploding. I've been told by people who had one and have one that you can completely charge the phone in 15 minutes. So you could be talking about, say, a battery that's 3,800 milliamp hours charging in 15 minutes. That's a lot of heat to dissipate. That, I don't know. To me, that sounds Like, it's definitely part of the reason. Now, Google is typically a reminder to all OEMs to make sure Android operating system and all features are supported by the device. It's documented in the hardware requirements, blah, blah, blah. So this is something they're probably going to say, hey, if you want to pay to play, you've got to follow my rules. Now, this is something everybody does. Windows Phone, for example, has a list of stuff that you have to do and, you know, what requirement. It might not bode well for manufacturers, but this might benefit millions of Android users if Google does require a single standard for fast charging in the future. Everyone will be using some fast charger for their smartphones, as pointed out by others. So, I don't know. I don't know much about USB-C. Like I said, I don't actually have a device that supports it. But I do think that fast charging not done right causes problems. I mean, honestly, you're charging something fast. There's heat, like I said. So we'll see definitely how well that turns out for them. Now, the next thing I'm talking about, and this is something I'm really excited about, was augmented reality in cars. Now, I'm going to set the picture for you because, well, this is a podcast, so can't really show you. Now, I want you to imagine it's a sunny day and you're going to somebody's house. You know, say they live a couple hours away and you've never been there. And you could use your cell phone and listen to them. But imagine this, you have a heads-up display and your GPS is literally overlaying on your screen. You don't have to take your eyes off the road. There's a little display right in your eyes vision so you can see the street name, how fast you're going. You never have to look down. You can keep your head on a swivel and just keep driving. Now, there's a new modular display device that gives any car augmented reality capabilities. Now, this device is currently on Indiegogo. CarBot is closing on its final day of raising funds while stopping just shy of rising its $100,000 United States mark that it asked for. Now, what this device looks like, it's pretty much a small box with a screen in front of it. And what it does is it projects onto that little screen. Now, if I read the description right, it looks like it plugs into the ODB2 port and communicates with the device. Now, the benefit of having access to the ODB2 port is it can talk to your car, so if a warning light comes up, it can give you more information. It knows how fast you're going and other things. It probably syncs with your cell phone, so you can use the GPS. And so it's just a pretty amazing piece of kit. Now, this is one of the reasons why I've been harping on augmented reality versus virtual reality. Augmented reality, I think, can make our lives better and can make our lives safer. Now, I did tell you kind of what it does. Now, this is what I would want. My dream car would have is the windshield would be a clear LCD screen embedded in the glass and blah, blah, blah. But what it would do is it would show me how fast I'm going. It would show me where I am via GPS. It would show me what music I'm playing or radio station, and would also have little displays for cameras mounted somewhere in the car. Cars always have blind spots, so imagine instead of having rear view mirrors, it would have right in your line of sight little cameras mounted on multiple locations of the car so you can know your surroundings 100% without necessarily keeping your eyes off of directly in front of you. And the another thing it would do would be amazing is instead of a little display with a fake map, imagine if it just had this little green line that's overlaid on the road. Now, what this would do was it'd tell you exactly where to go, to turn left and to turn right. And of course, it would have the street name somewhere so you could see it and not 100% rely on this green mark in the road. Because, you know, everybody knows GPSs aren't 100% right. Matter of fact, I had one of my GPSs, one of the early Magellans, I think, actually tell me to turn left right off a bridge. And so this is, I think, the future of cars. I know I've seen concepts for it for decades where they're talking about overhead displays and GPS's combinations and all sorts of fancy gizmos and gadgets. I've seen them talk about instead of having it built into the window, have it built into the dashboard. Now, I'm not sure if I'd want it built into the dashboard personally because it's just not enough size. I need something bigger. If I'm going to read a map, I actually have to be able to read it, which small things in my eyes don't exactly work together very well. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to GSMC, that's Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. And I want you to go to gsmcpodcasts.com and take a look at the myriad of amazing content that we do have. I want you to go to iTunes to subscribe to this podcast. You can also find us anywhere on the interwebs like SoundCloud and YouTube. The other thing I want you to do is go to Facebook.com, go in the search bar, type in GSMC Technology Podcast, find this episode, and if you have any comments, any questions, or any stories, or even things you want to send us for us to test out, please do. And ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney and my co-host, Shay Northrup, thank you for listening. We'll be right back.